listeners, you're listening to Biz Culture Matters on Clay 1180 AM. We are in the studio today, ready with studio guests and all sorts of fun. Do remember to check in with us, plug in right now, get your email ready, get it out, ask the experts at excellentcultures.com. We want to hear from you throughout the show, as well as contact you after the show, and let's have some talks. I am Zach Gandra, your host, here with Steve Gandra, the inimitable Steve Gandra.
I don't think you pronounce
that. I don't. Right. I say it wrong every week.
Yes, you do.
I do that on purpose.
Yes, you do. I think that's
becoming to prove my grad-level education
to
the crowd.
Your radio. That's your radio handle proving how educated you are.
Yes. Steve, how are you doing this week?
I'm doing wonderful,
We're
Zach.
Doing good. We're doing good.
I'm looking forward to our guest today.
You're always looking forward to our guest. I'm trying to get you to chit-chat a little bit about Excellent Cultures.
Yeah, but, I'm so excited.
Our upcoming stuff
I'm
we got
so
going on.
And today. Got a lot of great things going on. A lot of excellent companies had the opportunity to interview three executives last week. It's amazing how many good guys are out there. Those of you who listen to the show frequently know that our mission on Biz Culture Matters is to help the good guys win.
Yeah.
And there's so many good guys out there that are doing a great job that nobody's ever heard of. So we're rounding up good guys, good leaders, any place we can to talk about good things that are making a huge difference.
Yep. We talked to a good lawyer last week, Sarah Bird at Moz.com.
Yeah.
She's diverted. She's, what do you call it?
A converted
defected
lawyer.
Law.
defected
law.
Defected
law
firm. Now COO.
Not defective lawyer. She defected from being a lawyer.
Defected. Okay.
Like leaving Soviet Russia, right?
Great COO.
Yep.
Great COO. And
yeah,
we had
a great show.
We had their founder, Jillian Misig, the week before.
Yeah.
Brilliant people, brilliant company. Used to be a lawyer, not anymore.
Not anymore. So you want to catch that on excellentcultures.com too, or you can search Biz Culture Matters on iTunes. But let's go ahead and get into our guest, Steve's favorite part of the whole show. Today, we're going to dispel all of your negative thoughts about bankers, folks. Today is the day that if you have some hatred towards bankers or some frustration towards banking as a whole, you need to stay on the show and listen.
Yeah, hit the delete button on all of your negative banking attitudes, because we found a guy that is real.
Yep.
You know, he is real. He is a leader in the banking industry, CEO of Washington Federal here in the greater Seattle area. Roy Whitehead is with us today. When I first heard Roy speak, I was impressed. He was speaking to a group of CEOs here in the Seattle area, and I was exceptionally impressed with all of his knowledge about the banking industry, but even more so the character of his culture and style of leadership and, you know, his compassion and real world people perspectives. I knew that this was a guy we needed to get on the show, and thankfully he agreed to not just call in like so many of our guests do, but actually drive down to the studio, and he's with us live today.
We're glad you're here, Roy.
Well, I'm absolutely delighted to be here. Thank you so much for having me.
And you have a good radio voice, by the way.
Well, thank you. I'm a little intimidated listening to the two of you, because you were born for radio.
We've been practicing.
Yeah, we've done a few shows over the years.
I am going to throw this out there, and this is throwing a fastball, curveball, whatever Steve calls it. He goes, look, last week he goes, look, we have Roy Whitehead. We have Roy Whitehead with us next week. You need to be a little bit more professional.
Yeah. Not on my account.
Yeah, and I was like, no, we're on radio. I got to do my job.
As we're sitting in here in our jeans and T-shirts and cargo pants, and Roy's got the most beautiful, well-pressed, banker suit with a white shirt, and he's got his monogram on his cuffs.
Got his tie loosened, though. I like that his tie is loosened.
Yeah, we like that. We like that.
Good. So I told Steve, I said, no, people got to want, they're listening to the show, it's got to be somewhat entertaining, that's what you pay me for, and there we go. But we're great, we're excited to have you here today. Washington Federal, tell us a little bit about your background. You've also been married for a long time, too. We like saying that about the people that we interview.
Yeah, I have been, let's just start with that. I have been married to the same woman, my first wife, as I refer to her, for 37 years. We have two children, three beautiful grandchildren. Unfortunately, the three grandchildren moved to Hong Kong about a year ago, so we don't get to see them quite as often as we once did, but they were here for the summer. So we've had, in addition to the great weather, we've had a lot of time with our grandchildren, and it's been a glorious 3 or 4 months.
Awesome. And you've been with Washington Federal for how long now?
I've been with Washington Federal for 15 years. I was recruited to succeed my predecessor. The prior management regime did everything right during the course of their tenure running the company, except for the fact that they forgot that they weren't going to live forever.
Gotcha.
And so all of them came of age at the same time, and that created an opening for me. And I was fortunate enough to be selected for the role, and it's been a good ride for me. I've been CEO for 13 years.
13 years, incredible. And what was your background before that?
Always banking, something that I hadn't intended to get into earlier in life, but I was influenced by a banking professor at the University of South Carolina, where I went to school, and he opened my eyes to the competitive nature of the industry and the good that is done by bankers to keep the economy moving. So I went to work in the industry thinking that at least I would be at the center of business, would learn a lot about how the economy works, and if it turned out to be my profession, great. But if not, I would have learned a lot along the way that could be useful elsewhere.
Yeah, there you go. Impressive. I'm going to throw this out. I live in a neighborhood in Seattle. You live downtown Seattle.
I believe, right?
And you've how long have you lived downtown?
15 years.
So I just live blocks away from you in Capitol Hill, and my neighborhood is not super excited about bankers. As a whole,
don't those guys walk around the street carrying signs and throwing rocks and bricks?
That has been the thing lately.
Yeah, you notice I only come to your neighborhood to see you.
Yeah, he just picks me up and then drives me.
I live in the suburbs, folks.
But why is it that why do you think that so many people have a bad view of banking in America as a whole?
Well, first of all, just let me say you're correct about your neighborhood. In fact, yeah. We recently attempted to lease some space on Capitol Hill for the purpose of introducing a new branch model that we've got that would be designed specifically for those in the millennial generation who are accustomed to more automated service and catering to their needs. And the landlord that we approached actually declined because he said he wouldn't rent the space to a bank. So, I think it's a form of, I hate to say ignorance because certainly people on Capitol Hill and elsewhere are quite well informed.
Right.
But they don't know you, Roy.
Well, that's why I'm glad you're on the show.
They don't
know
you.
Why I led with that question, and we'll get a lot more into it, but go ahead.
I think largely it's a function of history. The banking industry has always been an industry that, in a profession that is easy for those who are in political power at the moment to beat up on any time there's a problem with the economy. So, and this has been going on for generations, probably hundreds of years for that matter. But more recently, I do think some mistakes were made by the banking industry during the course of the events that led up to the housing bust and the Great Recession.
Right.
There's a price to be paid for these things.
Right.
Unfortunately, most of that occurred in Washington, D.C. and on Wall Street. And it is very difficult for the public in general to discern between a bank like Washington Federal or a community bank here in the state of Washington versus a big Wall Street bank or one of the too big to fail operations.
Exactly. I think that's it's a great answer. And I agree with you. I think people do know, but they also don't know at the same time. You know, it's like ignorance isn't the answer of why they're doing that. But at the same time, you don't know the good and all that's going on. And that's why one of the reasons I'm excited to have you on the show.
Well, whenever we have a significant problem in society or in our lives, for whatever reason, human beings look for someone to blame.
We do.
And if we can narrow it right down to an individual, so much the better.
Right.
We haven't found that person yet
who's
responsible for the banking crisis, but we're not finished yet.
Yep, we're not finished.
Well, the guys on Capitol Hill are still looking for him.
Yep. You know? Yeah. Well, and I mean, I'm one to say, too. I mean, I love my neighborhood. That's why I live there. But there are some that are just out. There's also those that are just out there to do harm to the neighborhood and to do harm to anything they can and to take up a cause to disrupt and to dismantle. And, that's not the majority, but there's definitely some that use that. So.
Well, any time that we label an entire class of human beings as being unworthy of membership in society, it's
not a good thing.
It's not a great way of thinking.
It is not.
We wouldn't think, for example, to... denigrate someone because of their race or their religion.
Absolutely.
Those things are taboo in society today.
Absolutely.
And yet, for whatever reason, we don't hesitate to characterize all lawyers, all bankers, or all doctors in a certain way. And it is a form of discrimination.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, it was interesting, and I'm going to throw this out on
you. Except for the politicians. They deserve it.
Yeah. Well, they kind of bring it on themselves sometimes. So anyway, I did want to say this. Like, it was interesting because if you're in Seattle or not in Seattle, at least in Seattle, we know of kind of the May 1st riots type of deal that happened in Seattle near my neighborhood in downtown, where there's vandalism to large corporations. Nike Town took a big hit last year, and some broken glass and broken windows and different things. In my neighborhood, as the police pushed the gang or the parade or whatever it was up to Capitol Hill for whatever reason, there were some local businesses that got windows broken. And Walgreens, who's obviously a large corporate organization, also got their windows broken. And it was so interesting to me because I, blocks away from my house, just walked over after it happened, and I went and talked to the manager of Walgreens, and she was standing outside, and they're fixing the window or boarding up the windows. And I just asked her, I said, "I'm so sorry this happened to you. Is there any way we can help?" And her response was just so incredible. She's like, she goes, I understand Walgreens will fix this window, but I live here. I live in this neighborhood. I work here. This is my job. And people don't realize that. And so their anger at big corporation or their anger at whatever their ideas of banking or whatever the case may be, we forget that the people that are working there are our neighbors, are the ones that we care about and don't want harm. And so I loved her response. She goes, "Walgreens will fix this, but I want everybody to remember that I live in the neighborhood and I'm a local."
Yeah, I think that's a great point. I happen to be at the Starbucks kiosk in the U.S. Bank Tower. I probably shouldn't mention my competition, but they happen to be a very good bank also.
They have a great Starbucks down in the ground floor.
Yeah, but it was the May Day this year after the events of last year, and the employees were all quite concerned and angry, in fact, at those who perpetrated those crimes because they were required as a result to vacate the premises, go home, and they lost many, many hours of work because of that. And these are folks that in many cases work two jobs in order to support their families or to put a roof over their heads. So, those are the people who are primarily affected.
Absolutely.
It's very odd, isn't it? Think back to the 1960s when we had the race riots and people were destroying their own cities right where they live, their own neighborhoods.
Right.
It really doesn't make a lot of sense. There are better ways to raise objections and to express your point of view than destroying property.
Absolutely. And hopefully as humanity, we're going to move forward on that and continue. But we are going to take our first break. And then, Steve, you're going to lead into the first round of questions that we have for Roy. All right. You're listening to Biz Culture Matters on Clay 1180. Man, we went right at it right there. Here's your break. Bye.
Remember Ross Perot, the Texas millionaire who ran for president in the early 90s? Did you realize that he's built multiple companies that sold for billions? Each of his companies held a strong values-based culture. We interviewed his CFO and COO. His insightful comments on the role of culture in business are posted on the Culture News blog at excellentcultures.com. Take a look. You'll gain wonderful insights to building your own excellent cultures on excellentcultures.com. You can also follow us at XLNT Cultures or Facebook/Excellent Cultures.
Off-the-cuff management is old school at the very least. With culture at the root of every business problem or success, data-driven strategic leadership is where today's best businesses are focused. No one knows that better than Excellent Cultures. After 35 years, they are the Northwest's premier strategic leadership firm. Excellent Cultures has the expertise to read the soul of your business and generate abundance. Take the free Biz Culture MRI or ask the experts at excellentcultures.com.
As an executive, CEO, or business owner, do you find yourself struggling with work-life balance and achieving your goals at work and home? Are you overwhelmed in your workload and feel important things aren't getting done? Our coaches specialize in helping leaders like you overcome challenges and build a plan to recenter their life to achieve the balance and success you've always hoped for in your business and your personal life. Ask the experts at Excellent Cultures about the right plan for you.
And we're back. Biz Culture Matters. We are with Roy Whitehead, of Washington Federal. Steve, I could tell you were chomping at the bit right before break to get in some questions with Roy.
Well, I want Roy to take a little bit more time and tell us about, you know, the culture at Washington Federal. You know, what makes you guys different? You know, how is it that you made it through the downturn, you know, as a local institution so unscathed? Yeah, you know, you're still growing, you're acquiring, you know, other banking entities. I couldn't help but notice, I always like to visit executives in their office because you can feel the spirit of their people. And, you know, I remember when I walked into Roy's building, I was greeted by another fellow going up the same elevator. And, you know, I asked him, and I was late because traffic was bad, and I asked him, you know, where's Roy Whitehead's office? And he looks at me like, you know, I better help you. I better help you find. He's the boss. We better help you find Roy's office. But, I mean, he immediately took me all the way up, opened the door for me, showed me, you know, who to talk to, introduced me to two young ladies. And, you know, just the spirit of the organization you can feel. And it was happy people, and they were laughing while they were doing their work. And they were enjoying what they were doing, and it began to really resonate with me that, you know, this is a culture that's different than the rest of the stoic, cold banking organizations that I've been in before. So, Roy, I mean, how'd you guys get that way?
How did we get that way? Well, I think it probably goes all the way back to the roots of the company, which date back to 1917 when we were founded in the little fishing village of Ballard as a mechanism by which those in the community who had money, savers, could pool their money so that they could be intermediated out to those who needed money to buy a home. So those are the roots of the company, very community-based, and I think that has perpetuated all the way through to the current day. One of the things that you experienced is written into every single person's job description at Washington Federal, and that is to simply be nice. We feel like that's the least that we owe one another.
Right.
When we come to work every day, we're there so long with one another each and every day throughout the year that at minimum, we should have a pleasant workplace. So we really do try to be nice to one another. It's not Stepford Wives. We do give permission to one another to be human beings. But my assistant knows if I'm having a bad moment, if she'll just leave me alone for a little while, yeah. I'll be fine.
That's right.
And then I'll get over it.
Yeah, I met Catherine. She's pretty savvy. She's, you know, sharp woman, you know. And I would say that she's probably trained you more than you have trained her.
There's very little question about that. But, you know, I think more importantly is that we have just always had good business practices in place. It has always been all about the client, the customer, and we pride ourselves on being a service-oriented company as opposed to a sales organization. I think many banks have made the mistake, and in fact, I think the industry and the profession made a mistake about 30 years ago by converting loan officers to salespeople.
Yeah.
And now it's very widget-driven. The more you sell, the more you make in most banks. All of our employees are on a profit-sharing plan that is built around the success of the company, not their individual success. Nobody gets paid a commission for anything that they sell. So instead, it's all about listening to the client after asking a few open-ended questions to determine what their needs are and then matching up those needs with the benefits of our products. But everyone at the company is under the direction to not cram product on people. Never, ever, ever sell something to a client that they don't need, because I think that's a short path to mediocrity, and probably and in the long term will not allow us to survive.
Right.
We also know, Steve and Zach, that if we don't fulfill some basic need that society has, that we'll cease to be relevant. So, again, to the extent that you abuse those who need these very important services that we provide, we will lose our relevance, and then all these great jobs that we've got will go, and we'll be out delivering pizza or selling newspapers on the corner.
Yeah. You shared a little bit, and I think you went into it, but Washington Federal's tagline is invested here. And I could explain that, because I know I could feel it through what you're talking about. But explain why that's the tagline of Washington Federal.
Yeah, this came about in what I call the heart of darkness, 2008-2009, back when...
The year after I bought a house, by the way.
Yeah, lucky you. Hang in there. But those were the years in which the annual reports from banks read like confessions and bled with red ink, and just very, very difficult times when the industry's image and reputation was at low ebb. In fact, I told Steve I even picked up the phone one day and called my mother and apologized to her for growing up to become the president of a bank. And I'm glad I did, because she put it all in perspective for me, as mothers can do, by explaining that was right. Just quite all right, because quite frankly, she never expected much of me anyway.
But, leave it to your mom. Leave it to your mom to tell it like it is.
But we decided that we needed to re-express ourselves because we were doing quite well through the Great Recession, because we hadn't engaged in subprime lending and all of the exotic mortgage products that so many others had sold. We were a basic, plain vanilla 30-year fixed-rate mortgage lender. And by the way, we're also a portfolio lender, which means that we sell nothing into the secondary market. And believe you me, that does make a difference when one knows that one has to collect the loans that one makes.
Oh, yeah.
You're far more likely to do right by your clients to begin with, because you need to make certain that they pay you back. So out of a series of conversations with employees led by a professional branding organization, this whole thing about invested here just bubbled up from inside the soul of the company. And it is intended to mean that we are different from the Wall Street banks and those who exist strictly for the purpose of extracting as much for their clients as they can. You know, sometimes I think when I go into a retail store and today that there will be a machine that will jerk me up by my ankles as I leave and shake all the change out of my pockets. but we wanted to express that differentiation and let folks know that we were in it for the long haul, that we were invested here in your communities right along with you, and therefore we're going to do the right things and should be supported by the community that we're responsible for banking.
Absolutely.
Well, what I'm so impressed with, you know, I was about to ask the question, or actually make the statement first and then ask the question, that we've interviewed so many executives over the years, and rarely, I can't think of one CEO yet that could even recite their mission statement, let alone, you know, live it.
Right.
Without going to the website or the goal frame on the wall. And before I could ask the question, Roy shared with us, I was going to ask the question, okay, a lot of places get great starts and they have humble beginnings, and you know, they began in the small community being of service, and yet they get big and things go faster and they start selling stuff instead of serving, and they lose it. And I mean, and unfortunately, that's the majority. I mean, I remember not long ago we interviewed Jack Hollis, one of our clients from the, you know, Toyota marketing organization, and he shared that, you know, in this day and time, people can get so focused on quarterly reports and earnings and sales and everything else that they forget why they got into business to begin with, which is to serve their customers and to serve their people. And Roy just shared with us that what happened at Washington Federal, however it happened, was it bubbled up. I mean, it just, the culture bubbled up from the people. It wasn't a creative, slick, you know, mission, vision, values, strategic planning exercise, although I'm certain there is no lack of strategic planning at Washington Federal for the success that they've had. But this, you know, it bubbled up from the minds and hearts of the people, you know, is huge. So, Roy, tell us a little more. You've done such a great job of telling us about, you know, the culture of ethics, values, and employee engagement at Washington Federal. Where have you seen in your years, you've had lots of clients and lots of experience with your colleagues in the banking industry, what are some of the danger signs? Where have you seen good culture start to degenerate? What should executives and leaders watch out for?
Yeah, I think there are probably several warning signs. Hubris, of course, is always to be avoided. The moment that we begin to think, or any company begins to think, that they have the secret, that they're better than anybody in the history of the industry, and they can do no wrong, you know, that typically precedes the, you know, a fall, because the leaders start to then model behaviors that are inconsistent with the values that got the company to where it was to begin with. So I think that's something to watch out for. I think it's also we see it when companies begin to slide a bit. And often, the classic mistake is rather than reinvesting, rather than recognizing where the company is in their life cycle, and taking your lumps, reinvesting, and trying to get back on top again, we see companies begin to take shortcuts, reducing expenses or cutting corners in some way, shape, or form that leads to trouble. We've seen that in the banking business with the fees that just have gone up and up and up and up and left the public feeling as though they're nickel and diming them to death. I think we're seeing that a little bit in the airline industry today, where everything is a la carte. And so you begin to feel less valued as a client and seek alternatives to the purveyors of those services. So those are a couple of instances in which I think we can see things begin to go wrong. There are also outside external influences that can make it happen. Believe it or not, the government in all of its might, and let's bear in mind they control the army and the judicial system and the legislative process. If they train their sights on you, as they did the banking industry, they can do great damage to the reputation of a company or an industry and cause employees within that targeted group to feel less valued and therefore become disengaged. And so I think government has a responsibility to make certain that they respect the contribution that these hardworking people that show up at our bank and your businesses every single day make to the economy overall, because if it weren't for them, we wouldn't have an economy and we wouldn't have a government. We're all in this together.
So bad feds can create bad culture in some of the good organizations that they are basically chartered to keep good.
That can happen. And, clearly what I would characterize as poor Fed policy during the late 1990s and the early 2000s led to speculative behavior that wasn't good for society, and we all understand the consequences of that at this point in time.
We're heading into a break. This is getting really good. Break number two. You're listening to Biz Culture Matters on Clay 1180. We're with Roy Whitehead of Washington Federal. We'll be right back.
ExcellentCultures.com is always interviewing leaders committed to cultural leadership, excellence, and change. These leaders, like Russell Freeman, Ross Perot's COO, and Bob Hinton, CPA and Moss Adams Managing Partner, have world-class ideas. As advocates for creating a strong corporate culture that builds people and serves customers with excellence, they share breakthrough business ideas. Gain insights from Russell, Bob, and others on the Culture News blog at ExcellentCultures.com.
Off-the-cuff management is old school at the very least. With culture at the root of every business problem or success, data-driven strategic leadership is where today's best businesses are focused. No one knows that better than Excellent Cultures. After 35 years, they are the Northwest's premier strategic leadership firm. Excellent Cultures has the expertise to read the soul of your business and generate abundance. Take the free Biz Culture MRI or ask the experts at excellentcultures.com.
Has business taken over your life? Are you living to work or working to live? Stress, broken marriages, neglected relationships, and poor health are symptoms of a life out of balance. The right coaching plan can have transformational impact on the quality of your performance at work, depth of relationships at home, and personal sense of well-being. Ask the experts at Excellent Cultures how coaching can help you maximize your life and optimize your work. Stop struggling to survive. Ask the experts at Excellent Cultures how coaching can help you maximize your life and optimize your work.
So, just before the break, Roy was talking to us about some of the danger signs he sees of a good culture gone bad, and how companies that were started with great values and great culture end up drifting. And he used that word that I remember not too long ago I needed to look up the definition of. Really, folks, we didn't just look it up now in the studio. Hubris means pride or arrogance. And oftentimes when we're talking about business cultures, we use the example that culture sunk the Titanic. Everyone thinks it was the iceberg, but really it was the attitude and the mindset, exactly what Roy just described, the attitude and the mindset of the captain and the crew of that boat, believing that they were unsinkable, they were the greatest vessel that had ever been built, the hull was thicker than anything else, and that mindset is what caused them to not pay attention to the iceberg And culture, in fact, did sink the Titanic. And so what Roy is telling us leaders is, stop reading your own press clippings. Good to great is all about good organizations that never become great because they get too sold on being good and think they're great when they're not. Great feedback from Roy. So, Roy, Gallup just released their latest poll. Still 70%, hadn't changed in the last 2 years. 70% plus of our American workforce are labeled as disengaged. Told the confidential poll, not their boss, confidential poll, that they're disengaged. 18% hate their jobs. Most common reason for hating your job is because you hate your boss. So doesn't say much for our American economy competing in the global marketplace. So question is, that being the case, what are your thoughts on the connection between engaged employees and excellent cultures and performance? And then what are you guys doing at Washington Federal to keep your folks so engaged?
Just a terrific question, and one that we ask ourselves, as I'm sure other organizations do all the time. Ethics and values are the principles, the ideals, the rules by which we govern our activities at the company as we go about delivering banking services every day. And I tend to think of ethics as being synonymous with morals, whereas values are managerial judgments, opinions, beliefs about the behaviors that we need to employ as a group and individually within that group in order to beat the competition. And it's at the intersection of those two, ethics and values, I think, that every company has to stake its claim, stake out its space in the universe, and for better or for worse, live or die. We always start with integrity. And for us, that simply means just doing the right thing, not taking advantage of your position, and being honest. If there is a problem in the company that you're responsible for, don't hide it. Get it out on the table where the smartest minds in the company can deal with it and minimize any potential risk that might be inherent to that particular situation. Another example, perhaps, of ethics within our company is something we call fairness. Which I think there are lots of definitions around fairness, but for us that just means deservedness. We are a meritocracy, and we believe that those who contribute the most should, in order to be fairly treated, would get the most of the benefits over a long period of time. It also means fairly allocating the company's success between investors, clients, and employees. And I think in this day and time, there are too many companies that focus too extensively, perhaps thanks to CNBC and the like, on the investor and traders in New York and, where's the place that I can make the most money in the next 90 days. We take the longer-term approach and try to make certain that all the constituents to the company's success are treated fairly. I think, examples of values that we would employ are things like conservatism, which for us simply means never do something in the short run that can potentially kill the company in the long run. Again, it's not about this quarter or next quarter. It's about next year, 3 years from now, 5 years from now, 10 years from now. So don't bet the farm today and run the risk that all of these wonderful employees that have jobs will lose them, and that our clients won't have a good place to bank, and that our investors will see the corpus of their investment in the company destroyed. With that, I would ask for a prompt on how you'd like me to proceed with.
I think what you've said so far is more than 10 mouthfuls. It's about values not just being fancy words. It's about practical application of values in the real world of the day-to-day, and how you go about implementing them. And for example, integrity, so many folks use this beautiful word, but then nobody can really define it or describe it, let alone measure it. And what I just heard come out of your soul is how you implement and activate all these things, and it wasn't read off of the mission statement or out of your script. So that tells me so much about you know, and tells our listeners so much about, you know, the culture at Washington Federal. So can you think of anything consciously that you've done over the years that plants these core values in your people's hearts and minds so they get lived instead of just printed on the website or talked about or, you know, in the branding context?
It is an endless process, and it's every day, multiple times a day, reinforcing those behaviors that are representative of the company's values. And we have internal awards that incorporate, the expression of those values within the company. The most important award, the highest award that anybody in our company can achieve, is something called the Summit Award, and only about six people have attained that over the many years of my time at the company. And these are folks that live those values every day when they come to work. And so we hold them up to the rest of the company as being examples on how to succeed, not just in the company, but in life as well. So I would just say, Steve and Zach, that it is a continual process. And I won't say that we've got all the answers either. This is evolutionary. We're always learning. What's good for our company might not necessarily be good for another company. In fact, I think that's one of the issues around employee engagement versus disengagement is that it's a function of alignment. If you go to work for a company whose values different from your own, the chances that you're going to be self-actualized and fulfilled in that job and therefore be successful are extremely remote. Whereas if you buy into the values of the company where you work and you happen to have a good boss along the way, then the chances of success go up incredibly. So we interview with an eye towards values. We are less interested in the skills of the individual, and we are far more interested in their attitude their life philosophy and whether that lines up with those that we subscribe to.
So I heard two best practices in the context of your conversation that every leader who aspires to high performance and an excellent culture can adhere to. One is interviewing with an eye toward values, and that it was more important from a standpoint of hiring what someone's attitude was than necessarily some of the other things that are typically looked for in a job interview. Has it always been like that as long as you've been leading at Washington Federal, or is that a new practice that just you started a few years ago?
No, I think it has, for as long as I've been at the company, it has always been that way. We know if we are not a cohesive unit, and you never get 100% effectiveness in that regard, nor do we make the right employment selection 100% of the time. But if you can hit the ball 75% of the time, that's a pretty good average, and you're going to have a good, strong core culture, I think, along the way. In our company, people tend to go to work there and stay a long time, or they self-select out pretty quickly because they realize that it's not a fit and the culture is going to reject them if they don't find some place where they can go to live their values, and we encourage that. We know it's not for everyone, and in fact, at least the folks that I work with day to day, I've told them on multiple occasions to please, if you ever begin to feel that this is not fun anymore, that you're not making the contribution that you think you should, come talk with me about it, and we'll either get things redirected within the company, or I will help you find another job somewhere where you feel like you can be effective and be happy.
Right.
So, open communication and honesty in that regard, I think, is also very, very important.
Well, again, two more best practices. Leaders, I hope you are listening. Open, candid conversation about, is this the right fit or not? And if it's not, let's fix it. And if it's still not, let me help you find some place where you really feel comfortable and peaceful and it does fit. Very simple yet very applicable and huge in terms of operationalizing values and causing them to be alive and lived. And then the other one I heard was, the Summit Award. I mean, you actually give awards to people for stuff other than putting money on the bottom line because they had the biggest sales quarter.
What a shocker.
Yeah.
Tell us just
a little bit about the Summit Award and how does
it when win? We get back from the break.
Oh, a break.
Summit
we
Award
we want to hear
after
about the Summit
the break.
Award now.
You're not recognizing my hand signals, people. The Biz Culture Matters on Kalea 1180 AM and excellentcultures.com. We'll be right back.
Remember Ross Perot, the Texas millionaire who ran for president in the early 90s? Did you realize that he's built multiple companies that sold for billions? Each of his companies held a strong values-based culture. We interviewed his CFO and COO. His insightful comments on the role of culture in business are posted on the Culture News blog at excellentcultures.com. Take a look. You'll gain wonderful insights to building your own excellent cultures on excellentcultures.com. You can also follow us at XLNT Cultures or Facebook/Excellent Cultures.
Off-the-cuff management is old school at the very least. With culture at the root of every business problem or success, data-driven strategic leadership is where today's best businesses are focused. No one knows that better than Excellent Cultures. After 35 years, they are the Northwest's premier strategic leadership firm. Excellent Cultures has the expertise to read the soul of your business and generate abundance. Take the free Biz Culture MRI or ask the experts at excellentcultures.com.
As an executive, CEO, or business owner, do you find yourself struggling with work-life balance and achieving your goals at work and home? Are you overwhelmed in your workload and feel important things aren't getting done? Our coaches specialize in helping leaders like you overcome challenges and build a plan to recenter their life, to achieve the balance and success you've always hoped for in your business and your personal life. Ask the experts at Excellent Cultures about the right plan for you.
So, before the break, I was dissecting the best practices that can be operationalized and duplicated from what Roy has shared with us has been so effective at Washington Federal. One was the whole concept of having dialogue with your people about, is there a fit? You know, do values fit here? And if not, let's talk about it. And if that doesn't work, then we'll actually help you find a place where it does fit. Another was essentially hiring with an eye more on the values and the attitude than necessarily, you know, the skills or the experience of the employee. And the third was they actually give awards and recognize folks formally with some, you know, awards as cool named as the Summit Award for, you know, living the culture of Washington Federal. So before the break, we were just about to hear Roy, tell us more about the Summit Award and how does one win it? And what was it, three people you said was all that?
I think we've had seven awards over the years.
Wow.
Yes.
Wow. So how does one win the Summit Award?
Well, one has to be there, first of all, for 10 years, and one is required to be considered for it, to have been widely perceived by the organization, to have consistently represented the company's core values over a long period of time. For example, one of our core values is simplicity. Don't take big little problems and turn them into big problems. We don't like drama. Our job is to take big problems, make them small, and then ultimately to make them go away.
I'd like to put that one in at my family.
Yeah, that's
yeah, no kidding. Yes,
we don't like drama.
Could be a little more difficult there, but
says a family man who's been married for over 30 years.
Yeah, and you know, teamwork, of course, being willing to subordinate one's own goals and desires to the team's efforts would be another example. But at the end of the day, it has to be someone who, without question, had they not been employed by our company, you know, during the time that they were, the company would not be what it is today.
Wow.
And the acid test for that, as we think through this, and ultimately I make the final selection, is: are people going to stand up and cheer when the name is announced?
Wow!
So far, everybody's stood up and cheered for a long, long time when the names were announced.
Wow. So 10 years with the company.
Correct.
10 years of living the values.
Correct.
And living them to such an extent that their colleagues would stand up and cheer for the way that they've demonstrated they're living the values, and then also having made such a significant impact on the firm that had they not been there, the firm wouldn't be the same as it is.
That's correct.
Yeah. Wow, what an award, folks. Did you write? I hope you wrote that one down.
Do I get a Summit Award for doing a great radio host?
Well, you got to be here. You got to be talking 10 for 10 years.
Dang,
can you
it.
Imagine what it would be like?
It's only
to
been
talk
a year. It's only been a year. I got a long way to go.
Well, we could have a mini summit award. We could
mini
have a,
summit
a, hill, a hilltop yeah. award.
So the next value is creativity.
I get he bought me lunch today. Oh, so we're reaching the end of our time together. I do want to give you, Roy, a chance to really an opportunity to explain to our listeners, and I think to folks that live in my neighborhood and folks that live in the liberal Northwest, like what is really the importance of banking in society. And you shared a little bit of that with helping one another and creating space for one another, especially locally, that Washington Federal does so well. But what are the roles of stewardship that the banking has to hold on to? And then what are the great roles of why banking is so important to our society?
Yeah, also a very, very terrific question that sort of drives to the heart of the matter. Banking is one of the single most important inventions in the history of the world. Think about that. Before there were banks, people had a tendency to keep their wealth hidden away somewhere, unavailable to others in society. They protected it. And meanwhile, you had lots of folks out in other parts of the community who had great ideas for promoting the welfare of the of their fellow citizens, but no way to obtain the capital necessary to put those ideas to work. And banks, when they were created, served that purpose. Individuals could bring their hard-earned savings and place them in the bank, and those in turn could be lent to those who could put them to a more productive use, to the benefit of both. The savers got a little bit of a return on their mm-hmm. on their money that they otherwise weren't getting. Those who produced got the benefit of all of their entrepreneurial wealth, and society benefited because they got stuff and services that
right.
Otherwise that they wouldn't have received. And you know, this is something that sort of feeds on itself and is a great way to grow a community and grow an economy, because the more wealth is created, the more wealth that's available to do it all over again. And that's why we have here in the United States, you know, the greatest economy in the history of the world, that's delivered all of this prosperity to us, even those who are perhaps at the low end of the socioeconomic scale still lead a life that is better than the vast majority of other citizens
yes.
around the country in less well-developed countries. So
at
core, that is the job of banks, is to intermediate funds between those who have and those who need for the benefit of both. One of the misunderstandings about banks, I think, though, is the degree of risk that a bank can take. Our first responsibility is to the depositors.
Yeah.
We have to protect the depositors' money, and that is sacrosanct.
Right.
So we can only take a limited amount of risk, which means we're more like a grocery store than a Wall Street trading bank. We operate on very, very thin margins. You hear it all the time. Banks aren't lending. You can't get a loan from a bank unless
right.
you don't need it, et cetera. And the reason for that sentiment is because there is a lack of understanding as to the role of bank debt on an individual or a business's balance sheet. It should be the lowest risk financing that you have on your personal balance sheet. If you are starting a business, that you don't start a business with bank debt. You go get venture capital. You get
right.
Uncle Bill, or if it's a more sophisticated operation, you go to people who are in that business of providing that very risky form of venture capital, because
right.
they will look at 100 deals, they'll choose 10, and one of them might turn out to be you know, a home run that pays for
right.
all of the others. We operate on a 2% spread, so we can't take a lot of risk. And the reason is that we're trying to protect the depositor.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And so it's important to know that. The other things that I would like for the public in general to remember is that in every community that I've ever been in, and I think this is true across the country and perhaps even around the world, when you look at community organizations, there will always be a banker in the mix somewhere. These are people who are attracted to this profession because they are not necessarily risk takers. They are not like the Wall Street traders who are there to extract as much as they can for themselves. We are stewards. You use the word. That's our, that's the way we think. Our job is to manage this company and care for these assets as well as we can for as long as we're given that opportunity, and then turn them over to the next generation of management in as good or better shape than we found them in. And along the way, we for whatever reason, are motivated just in general to get involved in things, to better understand our community and what their needs are. So the Chamber of Commerce, I ran the United Way in King County, the annual fundraising drive a couple of years ago.
Awesome.
There's always a banker in the middle of just about every not-for-profit or charitable organization that you find in town. And the core reason for that, I said earlier, I don't know exactly why. I do know why. And it's because we all know as bankers that we can only be as strong as the community and the market that we serve. So unless we are out there helping to develop the market with our time and our energy and our knowledge and best efforts, then we're not going to grow as an institution.
That's huge. That's so clarifying and peaceful. It's like, yes, this is good for our society. This is good for people. This is good for neighborhoods. This is good for...
Well, the few bad guys are obviously the guys that lost track of the fact that we're stewards and thought they were Wall Street traders.
Right.
And got things turned around.
Well, and the great thing you led the show with was when we had the financial real estate crash, we stopped having bankers and started having salesmen. And I think that's a huge key point, because I have friends that were doing all sorts of things, and then all of a sudden they're mortgage brokers. You know, it's I was a painter. Now I'm a mortgage broker.
And interesting, that's a good point, too, because mortgage bankers are not bankers.
Right. That's a good point.
They originate loans. That's their job. They package them up, and they sell them off into the secondary market.
That's great.
And there are lots of great mortgage bankers out there. We do business with many of them. But as an industry, they really lost their way during the run up to the housing crisis, and much of that was a function of Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac and the FHA, VA, the government sponsored enterprises that over promoted housing as something that every citizen in the country was deserving of and needed. And quite frankly, there are lots of people who shouldn't be living in a home. My daughter was a good example of that at that time. She was a recent college grad. Her future was relatively unknown. The last thing in the world she needed was a mortgage loan and a house. So she should have been renting. You know, banks are not mortgage banks. Although some banks run mortgage banks, and you know, this does get a little complicated, doesn't it, for the public.
Yeah, it does.
I think there's one other thing, if you don't mind, that I would like to speak to, and that is that it is very popular right now to think that credit unions somehow have the high moral ground on banks. And the one thing that I think the public lacks total understanding of is that the cost structure for a credit union is considerably lower than that for a bank, because this year, for example, we'll pay about $80 million in federal income taxes.
Wow.
There is a credit union that is roughly our size in this market that does more business than we do, has more accounts. They pay exactly zero in federal income taxes. So, of course, if we had that $80 million in our pocket to hire more people, to pay them more money, to have more ATMs, to do more advertising, to have more parties for our customers, they probably would like us a lot better too.
That is very true.
So we'd like for the public to think about that, and think about if you're moving your account from a bank to a credit union, you are lessening society's ability to build bridges, to finance highways, to build schools, and to do all of the things that we have to have as a society in order to grow and prosper.
That is an incredible ending of the show and a wonderful public service announcement.
Never realized that.
That's crazy. All right. You're going to listen to this show again, I know, and you're going to do it at excellentcultures.com. Thank you, Roy. We appreciate you being on the show. We'll have to do it again sometime. I'm going to wear a tie next time. And Steve?
You'll never wear a tie.
You're right. I'm not going to wear a tie. All right, guys. We'll be with you next time.
A tie and then a white shirt to cover your tattoo.
That's it. There you go.
He's
Biz Culture
for
Matters.
Diogenes.
Yeah, that's it. Biz Culture Matters on Clay 1180 AM. Bye-bye.
Remember Ross Perot, the Texas millionaire who ran for president in the early 90s? Did you realize that he's built multiple companies that sold for billions? Each of his companies held a strong values-based culture. We interviewed his CFO and COO. His insightful comments on the role of culture in business are posted on the Culture News blog at excellentcultures.com. Take a look. You'll gain wonderful insights to building your own excellent cultures on excellentcultures.com. You can also follow us at XLNTcultures or Facebook/excellentcultures.
Off-the-cuff management is old school at the very least. With culture at the root of every business problem or success, data-driven strategic leadership is where today's best businesses are focused. No one knows that better than Excellent Cultures. After 35 years, they are the Northwest's premier strategic leadership firm. Excellent Cultures has the expertise to read the soul of your business and generate abundance. Take the free Biz Culture MRI or ask the experts at excellentcultures.com.
As an executive, CEO, or business owner, do you find yourself struggling with work-life balance and achieving your goals at work and home? Are you overwhelmed in your workload and feel important things aren't getting done? Our coaches specialize in helping leaders like you overcome challenges and build a plan to recenter their life, to achieve the balance and success you've always hoped for in your business and your personal life. Ask the experts at Excellent Cultures about the right plan for you.